The people they most want to buy off, that they need to be have engaged, are the skeptics and the libertarians, who are the most anti-government. The interest rates can never, ever mathematically renormalize. They can never. I don't want to pay for those bombs raining down on Syria under some fake trumped-up chemical attack narrative. I don't believe in it. I actually think it's your moral duty to defund these guys and bring about the debt collapse.
Acapulco, Mexico. This is Anarchast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Anarchast, your home for anarchy on the internet. And we might also put this on the Dollar Vigilante channel because I've got Francis Hunt coming in from the United Kingdom. He's known as the crypto sniper, the market sniper, and the great reset sniper, which are actually all three things that I very much focus on at the Dollar Vigilante. Obviously, the great reset referring to the coming financial economic collapse, whatever terms you want to use for that. The market sniper, obviously, I cover the market, especially Ed Bugos at the Dollar Vigilante. And then, of course, the crypto sniper. I've definitely been covering crypto since about 2011. So very much on the same page. And I actually met Francis at Anarchapoco this year and got along really well with him and thought that he should come on Anarchast and talk about his view on what's going on in the world. And not only just what's going on, but how to kind of protect yourself and get ahead of the game and profit from it or whatever you want to do, but actually have some solutions to what's going on, not just point out all the problems. So, Francis, it's a real pleasure to have you on. First question I have to ask you, though, is, how did you become an anarchist?
Wow, Jeff. Firstly, massive thank you for engaging me with both yourself and your audience. And also a second home run for you there on the program you put on early on in this year. If people aren't attending, I would certainly say make sure you get down there. That was a great event, great venue, great speakers. And as I said in a small synopsis on the InfoWars clip, these are our tribe, these people that came down and you engage with them. But now to your question. I think from a very early age, my greatest problem in life that made my life exceptionally difficult is that I hated taking orders. I hated complying, and I always went the other way that other people went. So there was an inherent disobedience, what they was called by parents and teachers as kind of disobedience, and an inherent suspicion. I always wanted to know why. In all silly little events, what will happen to me if? And I always tended to want to test the line a little bit because I just didn't seem to have a tendency to want to take too many things for lib. So I think I had a natural tendency towards that, and that's just grown. And as you know, with events both financially, the 9/11 is what I call the acid test for critical thinkers, as do you, from my understanding of your work as well. A whole bunch of things, you start to pull the pieces together and you just realize that we need to rage against a very big and very powerful machine that is very capable. That's Trojan elements, virus elements, controlled hangouts and all sorts. So you really need to know where you stand, because there's a lot of there's a lot of chicanery and there's a lot behind the scenes. So naturally, if you take that view, you are an anarchist. You're questioning everything you hear. You're questioning the validity of it, and you understand that there's far more deception. In fact, I've learned to unlearn everything that I thought I'd learned. It's a process you kind of go. I now take everything as hypothesis. You've done some awesome topics, lunar landing and all sorts of quite out there things. Sometimes you just have to take things as hypothesis until proven to you to a highest enough level to your mind. So you have to unlearn a lot, and I've gone through that process, and I think that's anarchy as well. Deep-seated rooting out the wiring you were given when you weren't capable to resist as a critical thinker. You got programmed early, and this is the thing about schools and vaccinations and all of them. They get you when you're early. A lot of these, the dark states maneuverings, they actually play the long game. This is what makes them so dangerous. Transgenerational. They're prepared to get their agenda through on a transgenerational basis. And the next generation always says, oh, my dad and my mom were so stuffy, I'm going to go the other way, thinking they're being smart, and they end up complying with an edict while thinking they're rebelling of the control structure, which is my chosen phrase, by the way, for them. I don't believe in encouraging them, in calling them elites. This is all about control and a network stroke structure that we are being managed through and by. And this is, I'm talking now with my reset hat on. And it's also, I suppose, slightly conspiratorial, that very tainted phrase, which I always take to mean as a critical thinker questioning words from known deceivers. But unfortunately, the phrase doesn't mean that to everybody, particularly in the mainstream media. But that's me, and that's why I'm a natural fit to anarchism.
Yeah, absolutely. You're talking about the Great Reset. Obviously, at the Dollar Vigilante, our tagline is surviving and prospering during and after the dollar collapse. And we were talking before this show that when I first started in 2010, I was wondering what I would possibly talk about every day. And now it's literally every day I have to just pick one or two of the 10 or 20 really big things going on. There's so much going on. In your opinion, talking with your Great Reset sniper hat on, where are we at with this? You call it the reset. You call it also, instead of the elites, the control structure. I think that's a great name for it, actually. I never like calling them elites because they're not elite at all. They're parasites at the very best. But where are we at with this? You know, a lot of people will say and have said in the past, oh, there's always some people saying that this whole thing's going to collapse any day now, but it hasn't yet. And so where are we at, in your opinion, along this trajectory?
Well, it's a great question, and it's one many ask. And the one thing about the control structure is there's a ratchet. In other words, they have their hands around your throat, and the only thing that happens next is it tightens, and then it closes at that level. It never loosens. It only tightens. And we're in an ever process of tightening. But there's many corners to this bag where people bleed out, and there's arbitrage in legal systems, there's arbitrage in nation states. And inherently, my view is anything that is set out to be transnational, in other words, it transcends national boundaries, is usually being set up by control structure components. If you think of the United Nations actually complaining to Japan about not taking immigration and saying they need to be censored for that, and things, statements like that, which came out recently, World Economic Forum making global climate change the biggest issue, and things like that. These are all a network of supposedly disparate, separate name run by different people, for which they all make the case that there needs to be laws and rules that are not determined at a national level. And anything like that, and I say climate change, whether you're for or against, sure, we have some effect by being humans and flying planes and driving cars, although I think that's greatly exaggerated. But the reason why they want to get talking about climate change, whether you're for or against, as long as they cause a tug of war where there's polar opposites, because there'll always be, so you build a wall, the one side the sea washes up against it, and the other side the sand builds up on the other side. So they just want to drag it into the center of the realm, because whatever gets decided ends up requiring a global solution, because it quite clearly, it doesn't help if, for example, Mexico and the United Kingdom agree on rules, but China and the US and everyone else is not in the game. So this then justifies further centralization and global structures which transcend national boundaries. So the breakdown of national boundaries is a major red flag for me, and this is going forward at a rapid rate. And it's actually a small little, and maybe some of the guys are going to go boo when I say this. We've got to look at everything dispassionately. You and I are both very much wanting to see the crypto market succeed. But in terms of my trading activity, that's with the market sniper and the crypto sniper hat now, I have a method that's straight out the market sniper. And I've actually been short some coins, and I've been in doing defense. In other words, you can't always be a hero, because then you just become like a gold bug. Always buy gold, never a reason or a season, never night, only long perennial summers, only day, never night, there's never a winter. And we have to recognize that, especially in a highly volatile instrument as such as the crypto markets, as an asset category, if that's what they to be called, you're going to have season and seasons. Anything that thinks that there's a fantasy that we postpone human nature, because markets actually respond to greed and fear, and that things don't overshoot and then have to undershoot for a while, are people that don't understand it. And the more volatile the instrument, the more crazy the overshoots, and then the more painful and long the undershoots are. And this is what people are experiencing right now in the crypto market, and they're forgetting the big game. But the point I was going to make is we also have to be dispassionate when we look at cryptos as a whole. The one thing that it will undermine is nation-state currencies. To me, I'm all for the undermining of nation-state debt and debt instruments, and the misresponsibility of central banks in specific nations. But the control structure is also achieving an agenda by taking things such as your money and the transfer of wealth and even the storage of wealth and the measure in which that's measured out of country-based issues, and making them now a different flavor. Now it's Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, etc. So this is no longer a national boundary. So there is an element that actually supports, that makes it potentially quite supportive. And some folk have said, you know, there was a 96 paper in the NSA. So we always have to retain our critical thinking and our jaundiced eye, as well as our bullish and optimistic eye in everything we do. Otherwise, we lack balance. And we've got to remember that there could actually be an agenda being served by the crypto markets. But they hate, this is one of their biggest things, they hate disorderly markets when they're involved in it. And disorderliness, so the Fed and all of these people are all about, things can go up in a very gradual way. They can go down. They hate smashdowns and melt-ups. Typically, that causes fear. And then that's usually when they'll get the likes of the Winklevoss twins in New York. You know, we need regulation, getting these people in. They'll get their Trojans in. They'll get people in calling in the government. And while they've been talking fraud, JP Morgan have also been investing like hell in cryptos, as you probably know. So this is also the Masonic element, where you speak one game and you PR one message and you act out another one. We've also had, I wanted to get my bit on those old codgers, Buffett and Munger, in who've been trying to outdo each other like a bunch of one-upping kids. You know, Buffett says it's rat poison, but not just rat poison, it has to be rat poison squared. You know, he's a genius, he's mathematically cured. And then his mate has to outdo him and comes up with some very concerning baby brain trading comments. I mean, that's very close to the bone for anybody who's had anything to do with Pizzagate and, you know, all of these things. It worries me. You know, I almost wonder if that's a taunt. But anyway, these guys are heavily invested in the old system, Wells Fargo and the banks. And they both missed completely the tech boom, the internet boom, and they entirely missed the point of big data as well, which is unfortunate. In some ways quite an unfortunate event for us, what with Facebook and Google and the amount of prying and data they're collecting on everybody. They're proof that you only really need to be good at one thing and have good timing once to become billionaires. Because in terms of their tech calling, their internet basis, and their view on cryptos, they have to be wrong, wrong, and wrong again. And this is the problem with thinking of ever meeting your heroes. If you give them enough time, they'll quickly dethrone themselves. And as someone who started out wanting to invest and started in stocks and then moved all the way into Forex 26 years ago, 27 years ago now, I now find him quite loathsome. And he's part of the control structure. And this is another interesting thing, and stop me because I'm just triggered here with each of these aspects. These oligarchs eventually get co-opted into being the control structure. If you ever get that wealthy, it seems you get that tap on the shoulder. And I don't know what form and method these conversations take place, but Warren Buffett made more money getting an incredibly preferential deal at the height of the subprime crash for buying convertible stock in Goldman Sachs, so that the newspapers could run, Buffett says, invest in America, when everyone was absolutely wetting the bed. And he got the incredible deal, but the government backstopped in full par value when AIG failed, who was the dumb kid in the room who laid off and took the other side of the bets and all the CDOs when the others realized they bought and created crap. And the government's paid them out in par. So Warren Buffett got to make an investment that had an inherent guarantee of the entire US tax base behind it. So he took no risk at all, and he was able to convert it to stock, and it quadrupled, and he made about $5 or $6 billion. And this is what I'm saying. The lines between governments and oligarchs are very blurry once you're part of the team. And his message is very much part of the team message they want. So these are the kind of things that are bubbling in my mind at the moment. There's a bit of reset, there's a bit of trading, there's a bit of everything in there. I don't know whether that resonated with you at all.
Yeah, you mentioned so many things that we can talk about. I guess one with sort of the oligarchs, or whatever you want to call them. You definitely look into some of these people, and they've been sort of raised from the get-go to be part of this system. I think Donald Trump's one of them. He was a Jesuit trained. His father or something, I forget. I think he really like inherited most of his money. I've even seen some people talk about how he's actually lost some of the money that he inherited when you look at his total net worth.
He was a poor investor, and you're absolutely spot on. And I'm so relieved to hear you taking that line, because I get a little frustrated when people say, but Trump won't let him. They always want to think they've got a good guy in the ring fighting for them. And right. They fail to realize that nobody ever gets to be red or blue team, or I think it's red and blue colors. It's like Labour and Conservatives in Britain, and it's Republicans, and no one ever gets to even run or have a run of chance who's truly independent. And you're spot on about that. Trump actually ran casinos and was bailed out by Chase Manhattan Bank, which had the then Rockefeller, John Dee, as head of it. And he failed, and he never closed out on Trump's failure to make good on his loans. And in fact, Trump sat through an entire boom and bust property cycle without ever being foreclosed on by the bank, despite being incredibly in the red. He was hopelessly bust. And in fact, they maintained him in quite a high lifestyle so that he could continue to act out as the successful billionaire when everyone knew he was hollowed out entirely. And then the next cycle, he got taken up. And that is Chase Bank, which was at Rockefeller on the board. So he was saved, and he was owned, and he's paying back now. And he got to play the apprentice for a bit on the media to get a little bit of practice of being a hero and a lad, and also to build his profile so that he could have that run. So you're totally right. There's no savior on either side of the left or the right.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, his uncle, if I understand correctly, Donald Trump's uncle, was there with the Bush family, and they actually took away most of Nikola Tesla's information that he had in his final days. It was like this stuff, these people are all part of a big club that, as George Carlin said, we ain't in it. And as you know, for other people as well, like George Soros, the name the Dollar Vigilante came from the old bond vigilantes. They used to be the old dollar vigilantes. They were like, hey, these central banks are printing up too much money. The government's going too much debt. We're going to force them to have to essentially not print so much and not to go into as much debt. And George Soros, back in the 70s, said, okay, well, the Bank of England, they printed too much, the government's too in debt, we're going to start selling their bonds. And that was the initial bond vigilante. And back in the day, who knows, maybe I would have been a bond vigilante. That was a good way to attack the governments and the central banks. But then once he made a lot of money, now look at what he does, right? So it appears that that ring of power, for whatever reason, it appears like no one can really, sort of not succumb to it at some point. And that's really what the whole movie, The Lord of the Rings, was about. It's about trying to find the purest person in the entire land of Middle Earth. They go to the Shire where everyone's pure and they're all anarchists. They're just launching off fireworks and drinking and smoking weed and find
Don't
the purest
hobbit.
Don't
be prejudiced against
there.
Short people while you're there. Exactly. with hairy feet. No, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, I love that parallel as well. There are a few people. I think of James Dyson, who's the vacuum guy, who's been exceedingly successful and is a really, truly amazing engineer and releases great products and has real concerning thoughts about the nature of things. But these people don't get a lot of oxygen and a lot of publicity. You'll hear about Branson's spaceship and Elon Musk's stuff. But you're not gonna hear political statements made by Dyson. A, he doesn't make a great deal, but when you take the time to find out about him. So there are some real pure people who've made some proper money, and they just don't opt to play in that club. But the funny thing is the pure ones will be the ones most harassed by tax-based issues, all sorts of snooping and various things, because they'll be tapped up to pull some favor at some point. And often it's a case of else we do a tax inquiry. And basically, the way they've set up the legal system is everybody is in violation of a tax situation in some way, whether it's a lunch chit that got it mistakenly put or whatever. And even if they haven't, they'll try. I don't know how much you remember. Did you take in the movie The Big Short, Jeff?
Yeah, actually, I thought that was a pretty good movie. I don't watch too many movies, but I watched that one for, you know, we were so involved in the, you know, as Austrian economic people, we were all expecting that bubble to collapse, and when it did, so it was interesting to see that movie.
And the interesting part that I'm going to highlight to you that comes out of that, this is the moral. This was an exceedingly moral guy who did the maths and realized this was completely fraudulent and that there was no way. And the way they rolled in the movie, there's a couple of key aspects to highlight, just so that everyone has no illusions about how the system works. First of all, so this is the amazing thing. This is what I call banker alchemy. You create debt, you push mortgage lending companies to lend to a poor black couple maybe with four kids who've never owned a home and are renting to buy a home way beyond their means because you've given them a temporary adjustable rate mortgage at a super low discount that actually is slightly less than their normal rental check. So they grab it. They don't realize that it goes up 3% in the rate terms, essentially, at the end of the discount period. But the agent tells them, don't worry, you'll just refinance and get another one, which is great when the property market is still just going up and up. But suddenly when it starts going down, if you want to refinance, you have to pay extra deposit in, which suddenly these people can't do and they get thrown out. So he assessed the situation. And banker alchemy is you take a whole lot of really crap loans that should never, ever have existed. And you create a portfolio. And this is where magic happens. You slice them and dice them according to district, maybe ethnicity, all sorts of extra things. And you cause specific levels of them. So a ninja guy on a complete ninja loan who doesn't have even a job and is just on social welfare checks is the crap of the crap. He's the stinkiest turd in the room. But the other stuff shouldn't have been done, lied about his income, you know, that's the second worst, etc., etc. They sliced and diced this, and then through that they managed to create triple A rated, along with a bit of strong arming of the S&P and all the rating agencies, portfolios. Now he assessed all that. And when the market started to fall, he just needed a very small percentage fall in the market overall for his entire portfolio to have gone up, because he shorted it. So in other words, when it went down, he made a huge amount of money. And it only had to go down, I think, 4%, the entire market, which ended up going a lot further, as you know, for his entire portfolio to be worthless, that he'd sold for millions. Hundreds of millions. In fact, he made virtually billions on that trade, as he sold billions of it, and he just had a margin. And what Goldman Sachs was doing is, because he'd shorted through them and there wasn't an open market, it wasn't a situation, it was an OTC deal. In other words, it's kind of like, I've sold my house to you and you keep insisting your house is worth $10 million, even though the market's crashed that amount. If you're the only determinant of what that price is, and it's not determined by estate agents giving independent valuations, you can keep holding the line. Goldman Sachs kept charging him, upping his margin that he had to keep to try squeeze him out of his winning position and cheating the rules and upping the whole thing. So they try to shake him out. When you're right, you can actually be damn right, and he was damn right, and they were doing damn well everything to try to stop him from getting his well-earned analytical assessment. And there's those scenes where he's phoning them and they're not returning his call. And he said, I've got to be in the money. Why? Where are you? This is the profits. And they kept asking for more money for his margin calls. Well, the whole long and short of that is they were totally amoral. And then once Goldman got a chance to offload it to AIG, and they had actually covered their loss on that position, was the first time the woman then returned his call. Hi, sorry, we haven't been available. You might remember that answering message quite near to the end of the movie. Yeah, we can now give you a formal mark to mark. And that's when he finally won. But they try to break his balls and doing it. So they were totally amoral. And it's basically once they realized they'd been backstopped by the government and they'd been able to just lay it off on AIG, and AIG just became this toxic idiot in the room that took everybody's bad crap and insured risk. They had no balance sheet to insure, and then required the government to come in. So there was that absolute amorality. And then the thing that happened is he was raided three times by IRS and Federal Reserve agents. Not a single banker, not a single guy who lied about the quality, not a ratings agency. No one went to jail on the injustices, the complete incompetence, and the intended fraud in setting up the whole Ponzi scheme. But the guy who identified it, and he actually notified them, he went to the feds and said, this is a pile of poo, it's going to go down, and notified his authorities, is the only guy that got shaken down. How's that not a microcosm of the absolute corruptness of the control structure and the game that they're managing? Fraud is good, greed is good, make money at any cost, no one goes to jail, the whistleblower goes down.
Yeah, it's like that in every facet of life today. That's the way the whole system's set up, is to reward the bad people and to hurt the good people. In general, the good people are generally your average taxpayer, and they're just, the whole saying that this whole system's set up to privatize profits and socialize losses. That's exactly the case, and then they must just laugh when these people go to their sports ball games and stand so proudly for their national anthem and talk about how proud they are to pay taxes. They must just be laughing because they're just screwing them from every angle possible. And then if you even talk about the courts, you know, they're going to jail for anything that you can imagine. You have a broken taillight, you might get killed in the U.S., but they can do whatever they want. And so many people are in jail, actually, in the U.S. It's got the largest prison population to a factor of three, I believe, in terms of population in the world. And you talk to most people in there, they've never hurt anyone. They never did anything. They crossed the street wrong, or they didn't do some regulation properly, and they're all in there. And then all the true criminals, George Bush and Donald Trump and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and all of them, they're all being waived and grandized, and they're putting out the first pitch at the baseball game, and everyone's
exactly.
cheering for them. And
they
some of them were actually involved in doing 9/11, and they're all just cheering. It's just so such a crazy. If I didn't actually see it all happening, I wouldn't believe it was possible. It's just amazing they've gotten away with it so far. So I guess the question is, can they continue to get away with it, or are people starting to wake up?
I want to be, because I'm naturally a positive and optimistic person. This is the history you have to weigh up on this one, Jeff. Oh, I want a kiss as well. That was awesome. this is my take on this situation. And it's not necessarily good news, and I am optimistic. And I think there's two ways of how you deal with this. You're talking about a game that financed both sides of the Napoleonic Wars. This isn't an old game. This is a transgenerational wealth game. I always say you should look to build not only wealth for yourself, but for your future kids. But you need it. And the wealth isn't about money, although that is a part thereof. It's about custodianship for multi-generations, for wisdom, and for learning. I think that's your highest, greatest calling as a father. And I'm a father, and as an alert, hopefully largely awake man, partner, and everyone else, is to pass on learning and to make sure it crosses generations. Because if you're not going to become that wealthy, or you are going to become approaching that wealthy, you need to understand the games of surviving, and you should aspire. When I keep saying wealth, I'm talking about knowledge, lifestyle, and ability to operate in a very, very tightening matrix. I think technology has enabled these guys to get a lot more information, a lot faster, a lot more real time, and to aggregate it. And I think the whole big data game is part of that ratcheting tighter on around the throat. That's not a positive statement to say, but I'm not going to not say something just because it isn't positive. I'm not going to be the guy who always says the glass half full. Sometimes the bit at the top is the potential. It's, you know, it could be a full beer if you fill that part. Yeah, you've got to look at everything. So it's transgenerational. And anything that opposes it, that has any risk of undermining it, they're very quick to Trojanize, which is my aspect. Bitcoin might have not. I'm keeping an open mind. The truth is nobody knows. Be honest about what you truly know. The origin of Bitcoin, it could have been from an NSA document, or it could have been from someone. Maybe there is a Satoshi, maybe it's a fairy tale. Who knows? But it could have been initially altruistic towards the banks. But if they don't like it and they feel threatened by it, which the media at one point was, it's, you know, it was dark porn, it was dark web, killer hiring money and drug purchasing money and everything they could throw at it. And then now that seems to have let up, apart from a few rogue elements that are threatened by their own financial positions, like Buffett and his Wells Fargo holding in traditional banks, etc. But generally, I think they're coming in. And I think the notion of secrecy is going to become harder and harder for anybody. I was just looking at one of the applications on blockchain, and it's going to be, I think property is going to be a place where it plays a massive hand. So in the US, UK, there's generally pretty good land registries and property. Mexico, you might have pretty strong as well, but there's certain countries, for example, I have a Croat friend whose family has money, and with the Yugoslavian war and all that broken up, she has to get like letters and documents, and they have to try redraw boundaries. And blockchain is going to be, I think blockchain, if it's not overtaken by Hashgraph and any of these other things, is going to be the big thing. Because suddenly I suspect there will be a global land registry. Everybody's property will be named, and it will be known, and anyone can find out. And I think that's kind of handy when you're buying and selling, and I can fractionalize a block of apartments, and you can buy 10% into my rental yield in a block of apartments in Cape Town, for example, or Sydney. But it's also going to be information. And I think one of the ways the control structure grabs you is by your kids, which tie you to a destination, because you have, they have to go to school if you're putting them through the schooling system, which is why I admire so much people who homeschool and keep travel as part of the homeschooling thing, and also where you live, because they've got you. Property taxes, when they are extractors. They are extractors through usury, money lending, usury, exchange, and all Trojan elements, fake markets like diamond markets, which are totally trumped up. There's an absolute abundance of them. You'll find the same kinds of people involved in the same industries all the time. And one of the things is that property, you can't run with your property on your back. You can't slip. I look to be quite mobile, because I think while there's still differences in world laws, now, in a number of places, you want to maintain high levels of liquidity. But at the same time, it's nice to have a base. It's nice to have a place where you can truly put some stuff down. But don't over-accumulate. Stay mobile. Stay liquid. That's one of my solutions for that. But how do you do that if you have kids that are in a school? It's very tough. And then you end up buying, and then they get you. Because once they have a proper registry, I think harmonization of taxation, removing the ability for people to play. I think we have to exploit the indifferences. So, for example, Cyprus has a corporate tax rate of 15%. Dublin has 12%. If you need a company, do it there, or have an offshore company. Eventually, they want to close those loopholes. And the IMF, I think we're all going to have a world tax number coming, which is going to be tied to you. And that's no longer going to be about, we have issues with residency for people that are mobile, they want to try capture. We're growing. The internet has led to a growing worldwide nomad of traveler who can potentially work. And I'm proud to be in that class because I can move around. But I think they want to tie you down. And they're going to give you a tax number. And the IMF is going to work on that. I think the SDRs are going to come in. And I've been reading some interesting material that is going to forward cast how the whole financial and the debt blow off and the currencies, being that you are dollar vigilante at the end of the day, will all come undone. And the dollar is going to be reduced to just being a major currency at some point in the future. Just kind of like the pound is today. You know, it's imperialistic, quite a big nation, but not so big anymore, and just be a currency instead of a world de facto currency. And I'm very interested in how that's going to play out. And that could also be a major event for the cryptos, and that'll be maybe the second coming of cryptos as and when that occurs. And you could get a lot of money. I always refer to cryptos as the basketball in the corner of the room, and the death bomb that's been created as Jupiter. And all the hot air in Jupiter needs to squeeze inside this basketball. So in terms of appreciation, at some point there will this boom and this hypervaluation and then sell off. And I avoid calling it a bubble. People, I think, use bubble incorrectly. The bulbs were bubbles because they were never worthless, and they were never worth what they were. They were hypervalued and they collapsed to being nothing. Crypto isn't going away. The internet wasn't really a bubble. There was a hypervaluation and a crash, but it wasn't a bubble. It brought us Amazon. It brought us all these companies. So the concept had validity and the world was changed. And crypto is in the same light as that. So I don't use bubbles in the same way. I talk about hypervaluation and undershooting as subsequent to that. So crypto isn't really a bubble for me. I've got a long video where I do that. But anyway, on all of that, I think there's a lot of things coming through the blockchain. Some of them that are going to make certain things convenient, but it's also going to give control structures more power.
Yeah, they're doing so many things. Right off the bat, at the start of this interview, you kind of mentioned that you're not even sure if crypto wasn't even a sort of a government sort of a plan or plot. The more I think about it, I don't think it was. I actually was just reading today. I was in a hyperbaric chamber and I couldn't bring my phone in there. And I do that for health reasons. And I brought in the Book of Satoshi, which is a book that I actually wrote the foreword to. And it actually outlines what Satoshi was writing about on the cryptography channel before he even launched Bitcoin. And then as he was launching Bitcoin, it was clear he was definitely not some sort of government agent. It was clear he was very anarchist libertarian. But who knows? As you pointed out, I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see who was typing that. It could have been anyone. I've heard this more and more as it's been growing, that a lot of people are... I've even heard some pretty decent people that I know, that I consider to be friends, talking about, I think it's a government sort of plot or whatever. Well, you know, in many ways, the internet was quite similar in that way. A lot of people think that the government created the internet. It kind of came out of CERN. Even Al Gore said he created the internet. But really, it was mostly a lot of people just working on computer stuff all over the world, and it all kind of came together. They ended up using the TCP/IP protocol, which was created at CERN and sort of created by the Department of Defense and all that sort of stuff. But it could have been anything else as well. So in some ways, the internet was kind of involved by the government, but in some ways it wasn't.
Yeah. And same thing with cryptos to some extent. The thing is, you've got to be in the matrix you can't not participate in the matrix to look after your own personal needs. We can't vote out of the internet. You can become a Mormon, I suppose, and go around in a buggy and all of that. But there's a need to participate. You have to be, you still have to play in the matrix to preserve your essence and to exist, because it's so broad and expansiveness. So I'm not by any way undermining engaging in crypto. I'm very active in it. But I just keep an eye that, there is good and bad things that come with this. And the globalization of escalating to that higher level is also a natural precursor to multinational laws and regulations about how these things are handled. So it opens doors for some good and some bad. And that's seeing the balance. And I think that's the wisest thing to do. So I never get emotionally as high, but that means I also don't crash as bad. And I think that's, we actually trade as a method of volatility funnel, which is we get involved when it's really low volatility because it precursors a major move, either up or down. And I always say you actually have to be, it's called the HVF method. And I say you actually emotionally yourself, you have to compress your own volatility of emotion. And that sounds like I'm the Grinch that steals a bit of Christmas, because we all want to run around the office and high five about that awesome trade or investment we did in a coin and tell everyone and its uncle. But then everyone and its uncle comes and asks you on your worst day when you've lost 30% of your pot, hey, so how's the money making going? You can't invite people in when it suits you and chuck them out when it doesn't. And I'm more about being stoic about what you're achieving in the market. You will be wrong and right, and it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And recognize that you're your most punch drunk after you've done well in your trading. So this is now, I suppose, my market sniper's hat talking. And at the same time, it's your goal, and it's a spiritual goal to build wealth. Because we aren't brokers that are just getting flow from some mega bank and getting drunk and going to strip joints and it's just the big easy. We are actually having to develop emotionally. We're having to develop self-awareness. We're having to stand back against our amygdala responses of flight and fight and apply method and process. And that's incredibly self-developmental. It's actually a higher yearning. And I personally think poverty is actually a mental disease in some aspects and should be treated like that. So you have to work on attitude and game. So I'm for wealth building, and I'm for utilizing the instruments that are there, regardless who put them there. Governments and control structures, if it's only tools in the farm, you got to pick them up and you got to hammer a nail in with it, because doing it with your fist ain't going to work. So I'm totally phlegmatic about whether it is a government thing or not. I know its role that it's playing, and I need to be engaged for the purpose of A, helping others build their wealth as well as my own. And I encourage everyone to take that view.
Yeah, absolutely. And you definitely pointed out that there's good and bad side to everything. Of course, with the internet, there's been so many good sides. As you pointed out, we can live these lifestyles now where we can live anywhere in the world and do so many things and talk to whoever we want, whenever we want, almost for free. It's amazing. I was around before the internet. Believe me, it's amazing. When I was growing up, I had three channels on my TV in black and white, and that was it. And a phone call to even like 200 miles away was $5 a minute or something like that. So a lot of changes in that way. But then you have the negatives, the NSA and the ability of the government to control and track. And it's very similar with crypto. And I have no doubt, and this is something that some people have sort of attacked me on. They're like, don't you see that crypto is going to lead to a global taxation system where they can track every transaction? It's like, yeah, I can absolutely see that. And they're going to do that. Absolutely. But that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do the opposite of that, trying to get involved in cryptocurrencies, which they can't control, which are totally private, which they can't track. And that's sort of like the good and bad side that's constantly wagering and going on, it seems like, since the beginning of mankind, from what I can tell.
You've got to stay at that cutting edge. Here's my take. They introduce something new, and they really need The people they most want to buy off, that they need to be have engaged, are the skeptics and the libertarians, who are the most anti-government and the most anti. So that's why crypto was initially the secret currency. It was private. It was everything. They didn't speak so much about the ledger actually maintaining and capturing everything. It was initially something that was covert, and that gets the libertarians in. Once you get your biggest skeptics, as the if you're the dark state, once you get your biggest skeptics on board, the rest of the herd will follow. These are kind of like a lead sheep that you need to chase in. And I certainly don't think we're sheep, but you want to get the lead steers, let's call it, to start moving in a particular direction. And they won't be able to close all the gates at the same time. So if you're a lead steer, you have to stay. For example, those that have been early into cryptos, made some money and got out, by the time your government has woken up and wiped the poo out of its eyes, you probably got away with anything you happen to have made if you're moving around and you're nimble. I'm not suggesting people should do anything illegal, but I think you should look after your own interests ahead of a dark state government that doesn't have your interests at heart. You've got to keep staying in that cutting edge. It's kind of like the people with taxation. He's gone this scheme and that scheme. The minute they try to close a few doors, sometimes others open and new things keep opening. So you've got to be nimble, and that's the best way. Pay something maybe if you have to, but make sure you're defending your wealth and you're not funding the machine, because we know what they're doing. I don't want to pay for those bombs raining down on Syria under some fake trumped up chemical attack narrative. I don't believe in it. I actually think it's your moral duty to defund these guys and bring about the debt collapse. I actually think if, in terms of being an anarchist, and this is the podcast for that, we need this Ponzi scheme to end soon. And some people, don't bring it down, and you know, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible anyway, and the longer it's out there, the worse it's going to be. It's like removing a cancer tumor. Get a small one out early. Kill a monster when it's small. And this one isn't a small monster by any means, but certainly don't ask for it to get bigger and stronger and develop even further, because it's going to crowd everything out. It's going to take you to Ayn Rand narrative, you know. We're literally the last remaining people that actually work and do something and add value. Go to a small little unknown island through a special little virtual medium, and all the socialists living off everybody else and, you know, clawing about political correctness, sit and live off each other and build debt until they collapse.
Yeah, absolutely. I was on the Dollar Vigilante groups just a couple of days ago, and Ed Bugos was mentioning that he thinks we're pretty close to the dollar really dropping and commodities really taking off and this whole inflation thing really taking off. And basically what he was saying was this might be the beginning of the end now. And I was right in there and I said, awesome. I can't wait till this is over. And, you know, a couple of people actually chimed in. They're actually Dollar Vigilante subscribers. They're like, how could you say that, Jeff? A lot of people are going to get hurt. It's like, well, I don't want any of this stuff to happen, but it's happening, and this is a horrible, heinous system. I actually gave him the example. It's like we were in Russia during Stalin times, and someone said, hey, it looks like Stalin might go down soon, and I was like, good. And it's like, well, but wait, you know, there's a lot of people going to get hurt, and let's just keep the gulags going, you know. It's like, you know, different ways of looking at things. But no, I don't want anyone to get hurt. In fact, everything I do is trying to educate people so that they can know what's happening. That's what you do as well, Francis, is you trying to educate people so they're aware and they can be prepared for what's going to happen. It's going to happen with or without us. And this is the whole keeping it doesn't matter what you think. It's going to happen. I would prefer it happen sooner rather than later, because this system is heinous. It's killed hundreds of millions of people. It's constantly extorting and impoverishing billions of people every single day. There's every day people are having bombs dropped on them. Every day people are getting hauled out of their cars in the U.S. because they had a missing taillight and have the crap beaten out of them. It's like, this system is not good at all. I'm sorry that when it goes down, some people will have some problems. But actually, I have a good side to that, Francis, is that so many people in the U.S. especially are so deluded at this point and so confused. They have no idea what reality even is anymore. They're 400 pounds overweight. They're unhappy. They go to the football games. They think they're happy. When this system comes down, maybe they'll lose their job. Maybe they won't be able to eat for a month or two. Maybe they'll get in shape. Maybe they'll start to realize, you know, maybe their head will clear up a bit. They won't be able to afford all their pharmaceuticals for a couple months. Maybe they'll start to be able to think clearly. Like, in many ways, it could be quite a positive thing for a lot of people, but definitely it's going to be a shock to a lot of people, and that really is the case.
You know, my 40s were probably the hardest decade. 2008 just about kicked it off. I was born in 68, and it was the hardest decade, and it's the most absolute a galvanizing decade I've ever had, and it's made me even more messianic, focused on my message, and it's the biggest gift. You know, the biggest tests give you the biggest gifts. You come out alive, you come out strong. So I lost my parents, I lost my business, I had lawsuits, the whole property market collapsed. I had, you know, a seven-digit sum that was due to come to me that didn't. I ended up going down, I got divorced, I got financially hollowed out. Everything under the sun happened, and I tell you what, it was the best damn thing that happened, because I've rebounded incredibly strongly, and I am absolutely messianic to the point of my understanding, and all the devils are there. I know who they are more than I've ever ever before. I've become a forensic scientist of what happened and what's probably likely to happen. And it's interesting, the history always rhymes. It's never exactly the same. You know, I think that they often test. There's often drills with false flags events, as you're probably aware. And I think long-term capital management was almost like the first bailout test for 2008. It was a huge bunch of hedge funds that had taken Clinton money and all sorts of other people's money. It was over leveraged to the extreme. It had Byron Scholes and Merton in it, who had won Nobel Prizes for the option pricing model and were supposed to be the smartest guys in the room. And then they were betting on bonds, which are debt markets. They were hobnobbing with politicians. They were absolutely massive. And the banks had leveraged them so far that the banks had actually over leveraged them to the point that the banks were actually too overstaked in the game. And they basically created a situation where government had to bail a private hedge fund out. Most people don't realize that's actually what happened. Private hedge fund was managed, and the taxpayer. You see, they look at a country as dispassionately. They see it as future revenue streams. They have a portfolio of could be head, cattle, dogs, whatever they want to think of us of. And it is just a net present value discussion. It's those who've done an MBA and know about net present values. You get an income stream and you discount them to future and you can see the value of it. You know what? If you have a big enough portfolio, you get quite accurate. That's how insurers, my brother was an actuary, that's how insurers can give life insurance. They don't know when you might die, Jeff, but if with a big enough portfolio of people, of males of a certain age group, they know where the mean age will be to within a certain amount. They can price a little bit above that and make money. And so these are the guys, how they view our tax streams. And they just put us as backstop to everything. Backstop to everything. But the amazing thing is the debt's got so damn big that the income from taxation is barely over 50% of what's expended now in the States every year. So they're adding trillions at an absolutely epic rate to the debt bomb. I remember meeting a mate who was an Australian guy here in London when we crossed 16 trillion being owned. It's now 21 trillion. It felt like yesterday that happened, a handful of years ago. And the first trillion took almost a couple of centuries to get there. And now you're at 21. And people don't understand the enormity of numbers. I do this sort of really quick synopsis. If you count to a million and you say one number a second, it's going to take you 12 and a half days. If you count to a billion, how many days do you think that's going to be? 32 years. You count to a trillion, you're talking about 32,000 years. That takes you back pre-dinosaurs, if they ever existed, God knows what. And now you've got to have 21 of those. I mean, people don't understand scale. They really don't. And there's this great website that does the dollar stacking next to 747s, and that gives a great idea. So there's no way that any of that ever gets paid off. It's not intended to. No one seriously thinks it will get. It's more about, it's like how consumers in the States buy cars. They don't have no idea what they're paying. They just cannot afford the payment. The fact that they might be buying 35% of the vehicle over 7 years and will have to have it in a certain condition to even trade it in and to pay some money and just to be rid of it and then put themselves in another deal, it's kind of how the government manages debt. You know, where they've lowered the price on interest rates. So this is the nature of the fraud. This is why I say we are, it's kind of like you put your hand in the cookie jar and you've opened it and grabbed all the cookies. You've got way too many to come back up. The interest rates can never, ever mathematically renormalize. They can never. And actually at the current level, the interest payments are still huge on every major nation state's balance sheet. So the reset, when you ask me, is the reset coming? For sure. It's impossible. You will not have a normal interest rate. Every time the Fed says, and we're going to do X number of rate hikes, This is hubris to keep a facade of a notion of real interest rates. The typical real interest rates of a normal balanced economy when we didn't have out of kilter debt was around 5 to 6%. We can't go there, not even close. We can't even go a fifth of the way because then it's all fall down. So the paranormal is this new 0% money environment. So there is no price on capital. There is no cost to capital, not to the people there. You and I can't borrow at 0.5%, but to the banks, reinflating them, reinflating their balance sheets. They get complete gifted money, and they print the damn stuff on such a scale that it's actually oversupplied. In normal economics, supply and demand means an excess amount of new money, an excess amount of bonds. The thing should be collapsing. The biggest bubble is never cryptos. People want to talk, this is insane. You get crypto market cap sitting at probably, what, 400 billion at the moment, maybe 450, and the guys are, bubble callers. And I go, mate, how big's all the equity markets in the whole planet? Right. Do you understand that the bond markets are virtually 12 times that? Do you understand that they're 12 times that? That is just corporate bonds and government bonds, debt. How's any of that ever going to get paid back? It's not. And crypto's the bubble?
Yeah. I actually, in 2008, pretty much when they went to 0% interest rates and quantitative easing was the first used as a term, I came out very quickly and I said interest rates will never go up again, ever. And I was laughed out of the place for a couple of years. Like every economist, well, that's impossible. Of course they're going to go up again. It's like, no, they mathematically they can't. It'll collapse the whole system. I never even imagined, though, that they would even have negative interest rates. I could never have imagined that you could get away with that. You have like some countries like Switzerland or whatever, they're like selling a 50-year bond where you get your money back in 50 years and you're paying them for the process when you know that you're investing in a currency that's devaluing at like 5 to 10% per year at the moment and probably going to speed up. Just unbelievable how far we've gone, and it's kind of holding together. So I actually made the prediction in 2010 that this won't last through this next decade. So it'll be over, you know, basically the collapse will happen, the reset, as you call it, by 2020. And I think it's pretty much on track. We'll see. Things can always last longer than you think.
Every time you put a time to it, you're going to be a mug. And I'm okay to be wrong, and respect you for putting your neck out, because there's so few people that put their neck out, and they don't, you know, we will be inaccurate. But I even think there's a possibility of 2021. We know about the Economist magazine 30 years ago, which 2018 is actually the 30th year anniversary. In fact, it's my crypto sniper icon on there. So there could be an argument even for this year. Things can suddenly escalate out of nowhere, as we've learned. But the interesting thing is all markets are manipulated. People think, that's just conspiracy theory. No, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? Not why would they, it's why wouldn't they? You might recall China had virtually no debt, and then when we went into the 2008 crash, we needed some heat in this depressing economy. So China became the consumer of last resort. Everyone was talking about China going to be bigger than America, and they went on a city building binge. They'd already started it, but they maxed that. They were buying all the steel, they were buying all the copper, they were keeping all the commodity prices up. And then they had a major heart attack, China, at about 14, which I'd put my neck out and said, that's going to happen. And they actually managed to get to virtually US levels of debt in the shortest time ever on record. I mean, there's eight lane highways and empty villages where people are sort of walking on the highway like a lone guy on a bicycle on these 8-lane highways. I've seen the videos. They don't allow tourists in those areas. Anyway, this is like future-proofing your long-term, building cities that people don't even know the names of yet and are essentially mothballed. And that's what effectively they did. Then they were collapsing. And everyone was in a panic of all the central bankers in the lead up to this. So because I was trading FX and I trade the markets, I have sort of a 360 vision. I could see they were very sketchy. And then they went into the Shanghai, which is where they all met. And this was all the G8 top heads. And they came out, everything's going to be fine, this is all good. And Jim Rykards also talks about it, and it's known as the Shanghai Accord. Basically, it means a dirty deal was done to manipulate currencies. And China was in huge trouble. because they'd just blown a huge debt bubble of epic proportions. And essentially what was agreed, I personally believe behind closed doors, I assessed, because essentially there were 11 subsequent events that occurred, and every single one of them supported this hypothesis that I'm putting forward. So you can make an assumption and then wait to see what happens next and see if they keep validating it. And they said, yeah, China's going to keep interest rates low. The Eurozone said they won't drop interest rates. So what actually happened is the euro and the yen appreciated. So the yen's in the same Asian ballpark, and sometimes competes with car makers, electronic goods. And the Chinese currency was pegged to the dollar, which was also probably the weakest currency. The CDOs, it all happened there. So the yen and the euro were allowed to appreciate, and they had to take the pain of that. If it is pain, having a strong currency is pain. And the renminbi or the yuan that was tied to the dollar, the dollar was allowed to go down, because they realized they couldn't devalue just the renminbi and the yuan. It would become obvious and people would hunt down China. So they took both down, the dollar, because the dollar needed it too. And because there was a soft range peg against the dollar, the Chinese got the relief they needed. So, I mean, how's that a correct market? It's meant to be determined by supply and demand of the official participants. People who are buying goods and need yuan because they're buying Chinese goods, and people that are investing in London and securing pounds. We don't have capitalism, Jeff. This is the conclusion I've come to. Capitalism, which has become a bit of a dirty word, actually relied on a key aspect, price discovery mechanism, aka a true and free market, which allowed for price discovery mechanism. If I wanted to hire Jeff Berwick's skills, and he had X, Y, and Z skills, and he was in Mexico, I could negotiate. And if there are other people with a similar skill sets, there's a free natural market. And if all things being equal, I would take the best value guy. That's a free market. Now, we have it in certain places, but we actually don't in the big issues. This is a controlled communism. This is communism. I said, we're all communists now. I've got a podcast that say we're all communists now. These guys are deciding who needs relief and taking turns to pass the baton around. And Trump went and wouldn't shake Merkel's hand recently because he wanted the dollar lower for a bit because Germany was getting an export advantage. You might remember he made comments about BMWs being assembled in Southern America coming into America, and he would levy them, etc. Next thing you know, you get what you want. Now we're having a dollar strength period. So it's fascinating. It's not a free market. Nothing's free. And the futures coming into cryptos, well, we don't know. But the problem is they leverage. And then you end up with the same inverted pyramids with 1 ounce of silver and umpteen contracts. Who knows what's happening? It's a hypothesis. I don't know for sure. But the one thing they do is the minute there's a market for something, they want to be able to control it. That's part of what they do. They're Trojan and they want to control it. The interest that they sell you capitalism, and they say capitalism has failed, but behind it, the dark actors are actually determining the range. That doesn't mean to the very tick and the eighth digit and a FX pair. It means they just cap it and floor it. And then it can have a certain amount of apparent free marketism within a range.
Yeah, absolutely. I call the U.S. just a mix between fascism and communism. It's nothing to do with freedom, free markets, land of the free, home of the brave, none of that stuff. That's all marketing. Francis, I'm running out of time here. It's been really interesting talking. Obviously, we could talk for hours and hours about all this sort of stuff, but I'm a bit running out of time. Why don't you let people know your sites and what you do, your Crypto Sniper, all the URLs and all that. We'll make sure to put those all down below. And just any sort of final last words you'd like to let people know.
Yeah, let's start with the final words and then I'll just leave the plugs. Firstly, thank you for allowing me to do that. And in a return plug, I absolutely suggest to everyone they should attend your event. And I'll be looking forward to be there personally myself again next year. It was outrageously good fun. It was good value. You have real access to the speakers. It's very well organized. And I enjoyed it immensely. And your part of the world is an amazing place. I stayed in a beautiful hotel. I think it's very close to your home, Jeff, because I had that same view in the back. It was Alicante or something like that. It was on this hill with these amazing flying buzzards around me. It was just awesome. Anyway, get out there, guys. So basically, if you understand, and you probably do because you're already here with Jeff, if you recognize that the Trojan psychopathic control structure are out to control every aspect of this game, are invading your privacy, and are collecting big data on you, and it's something that must be resisted. And the best way to do that is to maintain your wealth and build it further, support and educate those around you. You need to understand then what you need to do. And we focus on those aspects. And crypto is part of that. And having a method and knowing when, there is a season for everything. You know, I'm ashamed to say some people will go, boo, I've shorted some cryptos, even against fiat, something I never thought I would end up doing recently, and took money out the market and assisted others to do that. I've taken a lot of my guys in my community, which is the market sniper, but in crypto. So the method and the market, cryptos being the market, but we also do FX and equities, because it gives you the 360 degree view of what's happening on everything. And they are all correlated. When there is an asset class weakness, as there currently is at the moment, you should be able to play defense. It's not what you make, it's what you keep. You've got to know how to play defense. And the problem is people go into fear and hodl their way through. Some coins have had 85% bars. If you got out at the 61% FIB and bought back in at the within 15% of the lows, and we've done that for countless, and that's not even good execution, you're four or five times better off in Bitcoin valuation. And you can have that for a single Bitcoin, and in fact change on a single Bitcoin by part of our community. We've got an amazing community, WhatsApp groups all over the world, and globalized, and we focus on building wealth through cryptos and other markets with a method. The URL for the website is the three W's, themarketsniper.com. So it's the market and then single S for sniper.com. And you can follow on the market sniper and the crypto sniper. So the crypto stuff goes through the crypto sniper. And I have the reset sniper as well, as a for all things about the macro game and what's coming. We're going to be early to recognize what's going down. We're going to make sure we're liquid, and we're going to make sure we have all the geographies, which gets into topics like, do you have multiple passports? Do you have banks that are outside the common reporting zone? Lots of very useful things that are going to make you better financially prepped. I don't get into the guns and how many cans of beans you need. I leave that to other guys, but there is discussion in our social forum about all of that too. So you'll have an amazing community of like-minded, many of which are anarchists, and I'll be encouraging to attend your awesome event at the end of the year. Thanks very much for that.
Yeah, thank you, Francis. And we should talk a little further, maybe have you speak at the Dollar Vigilante Summit next year. We're very much on the same page. I like a lot of your different angles on certain things. We haven't even announced the Dollar Vigilante Summit yet, but it'll probably be before Anarkapoko next year. And, of course, there is Anarkapoko coming up February 14th to 17th in 2019. Man, time flies. The U.S. debt will be up around $23 trillion by then. That's current rates.
I was just about to say, I'm going to try to bring as much of my community down there, and you're going to need a bigger venue, Jeff, because you've just grown and grown and grown.
Yeah, actually, we do have a bigger. Everything's bigger next year. No one will actually believe what we have in store. So definitely check it out. We'll play a promo for it after this video. And if you like this video, please like, subscribe, share it down below. And that's it for Anarkast. I'd like to thank Francis Hutt for coming in. And that's it for Anarkast, your home for anarchy on the internet. Peace, love, and anarchy.
There was an idea
to bring together a group of remarkable people.
To see if we could become something more.
So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
Time, the state will know what it's like to lose. To feel so desperately that it's right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. Freedom still arrives.
Vacate the state. Engage all the speakers. And get this man a microphone.
Fun isn't something that one considers when eradicating tyranny. But this does put a smile on my face.